Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
I love science fiction, I love time travel, and I love talking about it here on the Council of Trent podcast. This is the very first Free for All Friday for 2021. So welcome. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend our Catholic faith. But on Fridays here on the podcast, we get to have a little bit of fun, let our hair down, talk about whatever kind of zany, interesting topics are out there, stuff that interests me, and I think it'll interest you as well. So the genesis for this podcast comes from me trying to get over my smartphone addiction. So you're probably like me. I hope you're not like me, but given the way the world is, you probably are. You've got a little bit of an addiction to your smartphone if you have one. I've really thought about getting rid of one, but it has been really convenient. I mean, the biggest thing that's most convenient is to have maps that are available if I'm out and I'm driving. But I mean, I could replace that with a GPS unit. But it is also really helpful to be able to check emails from work, to be able to look up reviews, to look up a menu from a restaurant. Let's say I look up a menu from a restaurant that I want to order food from. I can just do that, phone it in. It's really efficient. But here's the problem. A little worm has dug into my brain. So now I'm always trying to reach for my phone. I always want to check social media or check my email. I go on these digital snacking sprees and I want to break free from it. So for 2021, this is my idea to break free from it. The phone still has a lot of control over me, but I want to turn my urge to look at my phone into something a bit more productive. So instead of spending time, wasting time on social media, I'm downloading books, ebooks, onto a Libby app. So you can have Kindle, obviously, for your phone. I use a library app called Libby. There's similar apps for all different kinds of libraries. You can get audiobooks. A lot of times, I used to listen to a lot more audiobooks, but I haven't had time to do that recently. So now, to keep up with my reading regimen, I just download ebooks onto my phone, and if I have a spare minute and I just want to look down at my phone, I can read through a few pages of a book. So I got a book from the library on the history of time travel as it relates to fiction. So I thought that'd be a fun thing for us to be able to talk about here on the Council of Trent podcast. So let's jump into that. You might be thinking, well, the history of time travel, where does that start? Where do we find time travel in fiction? Now, if you read ancient poetic epics, ancient like the Hindu Rig Vedas, there are elements where magic transports people usually into the future. But the idea of time travel and of comparing the past, the present, and the future, it wasn't really that popular until the 19th century. As I was reading through this book, it pointed out that the idea of temporal progress is actually kind of a new phenomenon. So there's actually two new phenomenons, if you think about it. One is temporal progress. I'll get into that shortly. The other one is happiness. So there's a great book I read a long time ago called A History of Happiness. And it said that the idea of happiness, that you could be happy in this life, was something that sprouted up more in like the 18th and 19th centuries. So you think the Declaration of Independence, it says we have the right to the pursuit of happiness, not even the right to be happy, because you couldn't guarantee happiness in this life. But you see the beginning nascent roots of this. So for throughout most of human history, most people did not expect to be happy in this life. You'd have moments of joy and moments to celebrate, followed by warfare and pestilence and famine and the other hard things that life throws at you, or God throws at you, or the tests and trials of this life. So most people expected happiness, like a happiness as a state that you had in a constancy, something that would endure and you could count on. That was heaven. You didn't have it in this life. So that's one thing that's kind of a relatively new phenomenon. The not just that I could be happy in certain moments, but that I have an expectation to always be happy. That's a modern phenomenon. And the other one is this idea of temporal progress. So what makes us happy is to look at the future with optimism, to know things are getting better, we're inventing new things, we're making the world better. I mean, we're having that right now with 2021, right? I mean, it's irrational to think about, but it was a little disappointing. You know, the ball dropped on 2020, January 1st, 2021. I didn't watch it because I don't watch Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve anymore. Does he even do it anymore? Do they just call it that? Or Maybe they put him up for like 10 seconds, and then it's just Ryan Seacrest. The video of the Space Needle, though, was really weird and trippy and cool. I think the Seattle Space Needle has the New York Times ball dropping beat flat out. It's like a weird UFO hologram. Look that up. Seattle Space Needle 2020 New Year's Eve countdown. So the idea is that we have this expectation, though, of progress. And, you know, you think like, oh, 2021. Oh, 2020 was such a crummy year, right? Oh, 2020 is the worst year ever. So long, 2020. And then 2021 gets here and we still have the pandemic. We still have the fights about politics. We still have all the things that irritated us. You and I still had the things in our lives that bugged us in 2020 are here in 2021. The calendar ticking past didn't erase any of that, even though we had this idea that it would. I mean, deep down, it's like, good, 2020 is done. Well, don't you remember how 2020 started? Who knows what 2021 will be? It could be worse than 2020. I remember telling Laura, I said, you know, in the midst of the pandemic, remember when 2020 started and the thing we were most worried about and mad about was that the Pope slapped that lady's hand who grabbed his arm too roughly at the New Year's celebration in St. Peter's Basilica. Now we look back on that, we're like, oh, wow, crowds. People got together and we could still go to Mass. So no matter what 2021 throws at us, Jesus is King. That's what matters. So, but this, what we expect this kind of progress, right? But throughout most of history, people did not expect that. The future was thought to be, it'll basically be like the present, except for that day that Jesus comes back in his second coming. The future won't, people in the past, you go back thousands of years, when they look forward to the future, it was, you know, it'd probably be about the same as the present, except if God chooses to end history. And if you looked back in the past, now the stories would be different. You would tell different stories about ancestors and things that they did. But the kind of life that people led, there was kind of this anachronistic thinking. You go back to the works of William Shakespeare, for example. I was reading in this History of Time Travel, and it notes that in Shakespeare's plays, you have like clocks striking in Caesar's palace in the play Julius Caesar. In the play featuring Cleopatra, they're playing billiards. So when Leonardo da Vinci does his painting of The Last Supper, they're all sitting around at a Renaissance table drinking with these, you know, glass wine glasses. And it looks like a setting like The Last Supper by Da Vinci looks like if Jesus and the apostles were transported to early Renaissance Florence, you know, as opposed to if you actually were at the Last Supper, you would have seen Jesus and the apostles. It said they were reclining at table. So the table was probably just a very, very small platform at the Last Supper. And you would lie down on the floor and support yourself with your hand. And you used your other hand to like dip bread or take a drink. So it's very different from what you would, you know, expect from these modern Renaissance paintings. My point is that most people didn't think of progress. If you lived in the world, the past was a lot like it. There's just different stories, and the future had different stories to tell, but you didn't have this idea of progress until we get to the 19th century. In the 19th century, people get the bug that, wow, things could be not just different stories, but a different reality waits us in the future. And I think that's because in the 19th century, you saw the fruits of the Industrial Revolution and just the explosion of technology. You know, you have the steam engine, you have the cotton gin, you have telegraph communication, you have all of these inventions and technological applications that radically changed the world and shrank the world. Like when you get communications technology improved, you know, railroad technology, then the world starts to shrink and it gets smaller and smaller. Because if you go back through the history of fiction, if you wanted to write about a weird thing, like let's say you're an author and you said, you know, I want to write about something weird. I mean, science fiction is a relatively new genre in literature. We've always had fiction and we've always had weird fiction. I mean, think about Gulliver's Travels, for example. So Gulliver, in that story, he doesn't have to get on a rocket ship and go to another planet in the solar system or get in a time machine. He just goes sailing and he lands on an island with the Lilliputians, the little people. And he wakes up and they've tied him up with ropes. And it's a great story. I have these Usborne books, classics for boys. And it takes those stories and condenses them down to a level for a three-year-old or a five-year-old to be able to enjoy them with illustrations. And so I remember reading that to them, especially when they were 2 or 3 years old. they really enjoyed that. But in that story, in Gulliver's Travels, if you want something that's weird and out there, you could just assume there's parts of the world that are unexplored. And if my protagonist could find that part of the world, then he could go on all kinds of zany adventures, like finding the island of the Lilliputians, for example, or Robinson Crusoe doing, you know, being stranded on a desert island. But then as you get into the 19th century, you see more opportunities in fiction to explore not just places. As places get to be more explored and the world gets smaller, there's this idea, well, what if we went to different times, both times that are familiar and unfamiliar, but even familiar times in the past that would become unfamiliar through time travel? Or what about someone who arrived in the present from the past? So let's talk about the earliest kinds of time travel literature. Some of the earliest kinds were those about someone who travels into the future. Because if you think about it, traveling into the future is way easier than traveling to the past. In fact, you can, scientifically speaking, you absolutely can travel into the future. Well, first, you and I are traveling into the future. We travel into the future 1 second at a time. So we know there's a direction. We're going in that direction. But could you speed it up or slow it down? And you absolutely can. This has been proven through Einstein's theory of relativity through a phenomena called gravitational time dilation. So the gist of it is this. When you go faster, because the speed of light is constant, the speed of light doesn't change, as you go faster, time passes slower for you because that speed of light is constant. So if you were moving, for example, and you're interacting with photons that are hitting your eyes, for example, as you go faster, time actually slows down. So we know this is true because global positioning satellites, so the GPS satellites that orbit the Earth, they have little devices in them that recalibrate them and correct their internal clocks to compensate for the speed, because they're going, you know, thousands of miles per hour in space, and their local clock slows down. In fact, there are two astronauts who are traveling in space, and one of the twins, after the twin traveled in space for a while on these missions, one's an astronaut, the other was on Earth. The astronaut twin actually became younger than his biological brother, who was born first, because time passed slower for him. So these are kind of the things that traveling into the future, that's ripe for fiction. In fact, one of the best movies that shows gravitational time dilation is the movie Interstellar, directed by Christopher Nolan. So it's about Matthew McConaughey going to another planet to find a way to get humans to safety. The world's suffering from a blight. So he gets in the spaceship. All right. And so at one point in the story, he's traveling near a black hole. And because of this intensive gravity, his local clock moves much slower than clocks on Earth. And so his daughter, who's something like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old, when he goes back to the space shuttle, to his spaceship to get a message back from her, what felt like only like a few hours to him, 20 years had passed on Earth. And that's emotionally devastating. You just missed, you know, 20 years of your child's life. So if you want a good look at that kind of time travel, it's actually done very well in movie Interstellar. I recommend it. So Matthew McConaughey, in that example, he has the reverse of the movie Dazed and Confused. You ever see Dazed and Confused? I love high school girls. He has that creepy line. I love high school girls. I keep getting older. They keep staying the same age. He literally has a reverse of that in Interstellar, where his daughter keeps getting older and he stays the same age. So in 1819, you have the novel Rip Van Winkle, which explores the ability of someone to travel into the future without aging. This would be one of the earliest uses of time travel in fiction, at least in modern fiction. So there, Rip Van Winkle, he falls asleep for 20 years and he wakes up. I think he is 20 years older in the story, but the world has changed. So it's interesting. I mean, what's traveled forward in time is his consciousness. He's just basically missed 20 years of what happened. So it's on par with, you know, essentially waking up from a coma, for example. Another early example of time travel of this vein, where someone travels forward in time, I think this comes from H.G. Wells, who we're going to talk about, obviously, very soon. He talks about the book The Sleeper Awakes, of someone else who falls asleep for something like 50 years. He falls asleep for a long time. Though this is one of the Sleeper Awakes is one of the first examples of a time traveler making use of compound interest, where imagine if you could, you know, invest in a savings account now and then travel forward in the future 100 years, but you could do that without, especially if you could do that without aging, such as if you use cryogenic preservation or gravitational time dilation, you could be pretty wealthy if you could invest the money now and then collect it in 100 years without aging. Other examples of time travel literature during the 19th century would be A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens. Think about it, the ghost there. Though usually this time travel, it's done with magic or fantasy. So in A Christmas Carol, you have the ghost of Christmas past and the ghost of Christmas future taking Scrooge to the past and to the future. You have Edward Bellamy, his book Looking Backward. This was kind of this was socialist propaganda. It was published in 1888. And it's about a guy who falls asleep and he wakes up like 139 years later in the year 2000. And it's this socialist paradise. And he writes down, oh, here's how they did everything right to make socialism work. If only he had fallen asleep in 1850 and woke up in 1950 and could see Maoist China or the Soviet Union, would have been a lot different. You want more on that? Check out my book, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? The answer is no. Here's why. Another one using the fantasy trope would be Mark Twain, a.k.a. Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain, wrote The Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court in 1889. And so this is about a guy who he gets bonked on the head or something happens to him and he falls asleep and he wakes up in King Arthur's court in Camelot in the Middle Ages. And Samuel Clemens, so Mark Twain was really adept at writing this because when the Connecticut Yankee goes back to medieval Camelot, people think he's a wizard or a god because he's able to manipulate technology. And Clemens, he actually cared a lot about technology. He installed Samuel Bell's Bell's telephone the year it was patented. He got the brand new telephone put in his office. He had a brand new typewriter. Mark Twain cared a lot about technological innovations in his time and how it worked and to be on the cutting edge of technology. So that finds a way into his view of going back into the past and amazing people with technology in Connecticut Yankee. But it would not be until 1895 that we get the time machine as a machine, as opposed to a device. So prior to H.G. Wells' story, The Time Machine, time travel was primarily, it was a fantasy, magical device. You had a dream, you fell asleep. There weren't really devices that took you backwards in time or forwards in time. But the reason this changed was that in the late 19th century and early 20th century, people were really wondering, well, what is time? Time was taken to be just this constant thing separate from the universe. But the theories of, well, in the 19th century, you had electromagnetism. So you had Maxwell's equations that electricity and magnetism are actually part of one force. One theory can explain how they interact with each other. And so understanding that, scientists began to discover more how space and time interact with each other. So in the early 20th century, you got Einstein's theory of relativity. Though where Einstein probably got his ideas for the theory of relativity, in 1903 to 1904, Einstein worked at a patent office. I think this was in Bonn, Germany. He worked at a patent office. And a lot of the patents at that time were for clocks. Specifically, they were patents to help people to synchronize time in clocks. And if you go back through history, people didn't have synchronized time. The only thing that synchronized time was the sun. You looked at the sun. When the sun was up, you get up. Sun is highest in the day, that's midday. Sun sets, that's the end of the day. And you could look at the motion and direction of the stars, and have an internal sense of time to see how night passes. But there was no universal sense of time. But in the 19th century, people had to have the same time. It wasn't universal because obviously if the sun is at noon where I am, if you go 1,000 miles away in the other direction along the latitude line, the sun may be at the quarter position. It's different because the Earth is a globe. The sun doesn't shine in the same spot for everybody. That's why we have time zones. So why were time zones invented? Well, time zones were invented because you could travel now in the 19th century with railroads. You could travel to different cities who would have all their different times. And sometimes the times in different cities would be off by 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And normally, if you're just riding around on horseback, that's not a big deal. But if you have trains that are going at 50, 60 miles an hour, maybe 90, remember Back to the Future Part 3? Time travel. I got to talk about time travel movies. Doc Brown asks him, could you get the train up to 90? Because you got to get the train to 88 miles an hour to push the DeLorean to get it to travel in time. Well, sir, if you aren't carrying any cars and you got the fires blazing hotter than the flames of hell, she could make 90. So you got steam trains that are moving 50, 60 miles an hour. So even if the local time is off by, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes, you got to keep the train schedules on time. Otherwise, the trains are all going to crash into each other. So since you can instantly communicate with one another via telegraph, now there's an opportunity to synchronize time and synchronize clocks. And this started in England in the city of Greenwich to have standardized time in Europe. Hence, all the time zones now, if you look at a map of time zones, you see plus 6, plus 10, plus 12. All of them are synchronized to Greenwich Mean Time in Greenwich, England. So Einstein was very curious about how the flow of time worked. And so that, when he worked at the patent office, probably is what inspired him to do a lot of work on the theory of relativity. So in 1895, you have the machine, the time travel machine from H.G. Wells, and it only goes forward into the future. I haven't read the story in a very long time, so bear with me if I get it wrong. I think the time traveler goes ahead like 800,000 years or a million years into the future, and there's the Morlocks are now the creatures that run the world and live underground in the caves. And so it goes forward in that way. And it was considered this, you know, Wells used a lot of technobabble to explain how the machine could do this, because before, people didn't really hold your feet to the fire. If you did a story about time travel like Rip Van Winkle or Connecticut in King Arthur's Court, well, he has a dream or he got hit on the head or magic. Okay. But Wells is trying to say, no, you could use some kind of technology to get there. And people are saying, hold on a minute. There's all kinds of problems. And the problems still persist to this day when it comes to time travel. When you and I watch a time travel movie, we suspend disbelief because we want to have a good time, pun intended. But when you think about time travel, aside from the paradoxes, and we will get to those, there are a lot of problems that come forward with time travel, including problems you may not have thought of before. Here's the first one. When the time traveler gets somewhere, how does he know there's going to be empty space? And these were the objections. I'm going to read to you. These are the objections that were made in a literary journal in a review of the time machine, where people say, I can't suspend disbelief for Wells' time machine. How can Wells have a time machine? How can the time traveler do this? Let's see. Well, should I do 1920s Trent? We're talking about like 1898. Well, why can't you? 1920s Trent was just a lad in 1898, but sure, he could tell you. First of all, how does the time traveler know there's going to be free space when he gets there? Namely, if you go forward in time, let's say you're in your house and you activate the time machine and you go forward 100 years. Well, what if there's a pile of bricks there? What if you end up inside of a wall, inside of a solid structure? So time travel seems really dangerous. So that's why a lot of time travel literature has a handy explosion. So when the time machine gets there, it just explodes whatever's around it. So there happens to be open space. Here's another problem that, frankly, I've never really seen anyone address in time travel devices and fiction. People always overlook it. And if you watch Back to the Future, for example, you did not think of this, but it should have occurred to you with the DeLorean. Here's the problem. If you go back in time, let's say you go back in time 6 months, right? So Marty McFly gets in the DeLorean, and he only wants to go back in time 6 months. And he drives the DeLorean in Twin Pines Mall, which becomes Lone Pine Mall because he goes back to 1955 and runs over one of the pines. You got to look for these little Easter eggs when you watch these movies. Robert Zemeckis did a great job with Back to the Future. So Marty McFly goes back in time 6 months, gets in the DeLorean, drives 88 miles an hour, goes back in time, and he's in Hill Valley. No, he's not in Hill Valley, because 6 months ago, in that exact location in the universe, was not Hill Valley, was not planet Earth. Because 6 months ago, planet Earth was on the other side of the sun. The seasons were different. So if Marty went back in time 6 months, he would not be at Hill Valley. The DeLorean would be floating in outer space and he would asphyxiate to death. Because you think about it, the time machine has to, it sends you back in time, but the Earth is moving, it's rotating, and it's traveling through space at thousands of miles per hour. I remember reading about this on TV Tropes. Don't go to TV Tropes, you'll be stuck there forever reading about tropes and things that are used in fiction. But I was reading this section on time travel a long time ago, and there was, I think it was an anime, that had a weapon called a time bomb. And what this guy would do with this weapon is that if someone tried to attack him, he would throw the time bomb at the person and it would send them into the future 1 minute or 10 minutes. The problem is, of course, if they go into the future 10 minutes, the Earth has already moved past that point and they end up asphyxiating in outer space. So that's the problem. That's why I think if I was to do a time travel device that got me to go backwards into the past, for example, or into the future. Getting into the future is hard also, unless you just fall asleep or you're cryogenically frozen, because the Earth is moving. So I would have a computer where it says, all right, this time machine only can go backwards and forwards a set number of units. So maybe like 364 days, 23 hours, 11 minutes, 8 seconds, whatever is where the Earth will be at that exact moment. So that'd be kind of cool for plot devices in that if you wanted to go to a certain point in the past, if you wanted to be at a certain historical event or year, let's say a particular month, then you'd have to wait to activate your time travel machine until you were that 364 day long increment, you know, whatever the exact is for a year. I'm sure it's not exactly 365 days. So that's an unresolved problem that people critiqued Wells on. And he kind of hand waved it away to try to explain it. Other people, and remember, time travel was very new for people at this time in fiction. They're thinking, well, how does the device work? It doesn't make sense. One literary critic said to Wells, well, you're being inconsistent. How does this make sense at all? You're saying you can travel 1,000 years in 1 second. And we think, yeah, of course, get my time machine, 1 second, 1,000 years later. And he says, but how? Saying I could travel 1,000 years in 1 second is like saying I can travel a mile in an inch. How could I travel a mile in an inch? The units don't align with one another. If I can't travel 1 mile in an inch, then I can't travel 1,000 years in a second. And at first, it's kind of a good objection. Like, well, how could that be? But if the theory, and it is, the theory of relativity is correct, and space and time are interrelated, then it's possible you could traverse space and time through either spatial or temporal shortcuts. So how could you travel a mile in an inch? Well, what if you had a wormhole? So imagine, let's say you take a piece of paper. I'm grabbing a piece of paper in front of me, right? 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. You pull it out. So I've got my paper here. And I draw a line across it. How could I travel that line? Let's say the line is 8 inches. I want to travel it in less than a centimeter. How could I do that? Well, if I folded the paper. If I folded the paper between the two points at the ends and drew a hole between them, I could travel. I could reach the two points by taking a shortcut. So if you could bend the fabric of space, you could travel through space without going through all the spatial units. And if you could bend space-time, you could travel through all of time without going through all of the temporal units. So just a way to think about overcoming that objection. And then, of course, the objection raised at Wells was going into the past. They said that Wells saved himself in the time machine by sending the guy into the future. Because you can't really mess up and create paradoxes if you only go into the future, or if you go into the future and then return to the exact moment that you left. I'll link to this in the episode. If you want to get show resources, go to trendhornpodcast.com to get the resources I use for the shows. I did a whole episode on the philosophy of time. So like, is the future real? Is the past real? Could you go to the future? Could you go to the past? Is that even possible? Or does only the present exist? That's a heady question. And I address it in a whole episode I did on the philosophy of time itself. So assuming you could, the future and the past are real, people said, fine, you can go into the future. But if you pulled the lever and went back into the past, but what if, how could that be? People immediately, the paradoxes arose. And in the 1930s, people started talking about the grandfather paradox, which is, what would happen if I went back in time and I killed my grandfather when he was an 8-year-old boy, for example? Or, you know, it doesn't have to be that morbid. I just go back in time before my grandfather meets my grandmother, and I get him to marry somebody else instead of my grandmother. you know, what it, although honestly, if you went back, it wouldn't take much to disrupt you. If you just disrupted a little bit of your grandfather's life and it changed things enough so that he did not engage in the marital act with your grandmother at the exact moment he did in the timeline, you wouldn't exist. You wouldn't exist because when people engage in the marital act, they don't produce the same child every time, right? That's why siblings are different. There would be someone else who'd be a lot like you, but it wouldn't be you. If, you know, let's say that you went back in time and delayed their wedding by an hour. The wedding got delayed by an hour, and that delayed the honeymoon by an hour. Then the child they would conceive would not be you, and he would not invent time travel, and he would not go back in time to delay the wedding to cause his own conception. So it absolutely, this is the paradox. It's the grandfather paradox. How do you resolve the grandfather paradox? So there's two primary ways to resolve it. Well, three. One is to not think about it. You just have time travel fiction and you ask people not to think about it. Number two would be the parallel universe solution. That would be that when the time traveler goes back in time, he does not go back to his own, he goes back to a point in another universe. So any changes he makes there, when he goes back and he makes the changes, he only causes this other universe to be different. So the universe that he left has the same past and the future just lacks him as a time traveler. This he and he's altered another universe. Though a lot of people would say that it's not really time travel. That's not time travel, that's Sliders. Remember that old show, Sliders? I believe Jeremy, what was the guy's name who was the lead guy? The guy who was the scientist was Sala from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But they would travel to parallel universes, and they're always trying to get back to the universe that they left. Some are super different, like dinosaurs still exist, and others, it seemed like their universe, but it wasn't because there was a door that used to creak, and it didn't creak, and they're like, it's not the right one, let's go back. I'm like, maybe it just needs WD-40. I don't know. So that's the parallel universe solution, but it's not really time travel. That's universe hopping. The other way to resolve the grandfather paradox would be the Nabokov consistency proposal. That's the idea, if you do go back in time, the universe itself will prevent you from making any changes. If you try to delay the wedding, the universe will make it so that the cab gets lost, you get in an accident, end up at the hospital, that it will prevent you from making any changes to the timeline that would disrupt your ability to travel back into the past. And so what will end up having happened is that you were always there in the past when this event happened. It just doesn't end up changing the future. And actually, there is a bit of fiction where this is done quite well, and that would be in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Now, full disclosure, I haven't read the books. I don't think the Harry Potter films are great art, frankly. So I saw the movies when they were big and popular. I went with some of my friends who loved Harry Potter, went to the movies to see it with them. I wasn't that impressed. I did remember seeing Harry Potter and Prisoner of Azkaban with friends who just loved Harry Potter. And I thought this was an interesting part. So basically what happens in that is Harry Potter, and Hermione use a device called a time twister. And so they go back, I think, an hour or two to prevent somebody from being killed, prevent something bad from happening. I'm just going to rip this straight from Wikipedia to describe what happens in this scene, how they use the time twister. So here I'll start with what happens before they decide to go back in time. As the group departs, the full moon rises and Lupin transforms into a werewolf. Sirius transforms into his dog form to fight him off. In the midst of the chaos, Pettigrew transforms into a rat and escapes. I don't know entirely who all these people are. If you're a big Harry Potter fan, don't roast me over it. Harry Potter and Sirius are attacked by Dementors, and Harry sees a figure in the distance save them by casting a powerful Patronus spell. He believes the mysterious figure is his dead father before passing out, and he awakens to discover Sirius has been captured and sentenced to the Dementor's Kiss. I guess the Dementors, you know, in Azkaban, they're the guards there, and they steal your soul. Michael Scott, you know, the Dementors, they steal your soul. Acting on Dumbledore's advice, Harry and Hermione travel back in time with Hermione's time turner and watch themselves and Ron repeat the events. So when they do that, they go back, they save Buckbeak from execution, they witness the Dementors overpower past Harry and Sirius. And so the Harry from the present who went back in time he conjures the Patronus spell. So what happens is he goes back in time to save them. But as things were going in the past, Harry saw himself in the present, the future self, go back as part of the past event. So it's not like the past happened without Harry, and then he went back and he saved himself. As it was happening, he was already there. So I'm sorry if it's confusing. I guess you can just watch Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban if you're okay with that, and you can see what I mean. But they use time travel in this way so that it's not like someone can just go back, deus ex machina, and fix everything. Rather, you can't really change anything because you go back and everything you've done has already happened in the past. When you use the time turner, its effects were already present in the past as you use them. I probably didn't explain this well at all, but if you want that idea of dealing with the inconsistency, the grandfather paradox, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban is interesting in that regard. And also another movie that did it somewhat well, but was still trying to think it through, and you know, you can never do it perfectly well, is Avengers Endgame. I knew Avengers was going to do time travel. I had heard that on the internets. Like, you know, what are you going to do? And I love that they did this. Spoiler alert. I mean, come on, the movie's been out for forever. When I saw Avengers Infinity War and it ended with Thanos doing the snap and successfully wiping out half of existence, I laughed and started slow clapping at that. I thought it was awesome. I was so glad they did that. That was amazing. There has not been a downer ending like that to leave you on a cliffhanger to the next movie since Empire Strikes Back when Han Solo gets taken away in carbonite. Like, that was great. And I'm thinking, how are they going to resolve this in Endgame? I know they're going to do time. I figured they're going to do time travel somehow. I thought what was going to happen was that Ant-Man was actually going to emerge from the Quantum Zone in the past during the events from Infinity War. As I thought that's what they were. I knew they were going to use Ant-Man somehow. But the fact that he came back, thanks to the rat that walked over the time travel van, and he tells them, so they invent it. But I'm glad what they said was, look, we can't go back in time and stop Thanos from making the snap. You can't. You can't do that because they weren't there when it happened. You would create a paradox if you do that. You can't go back in time and stop the snap. You can't go back in time and kill baby Thanos, as Rhodey was saying, like, oh, maybe we should. You can't do that. They're saying a time heist. We'll go back, grab the Infinity Stones, assemble them, do a snap, get people back, and then send the stones right back to where they came from. Though that ends up with a lot of problems too. It would be really tragic. The idea that, because in, let's say, in Spider-Man Far From Home, which talks about post-snap, and everyone's like, oh man, people came back. That's crazy. Do you realize what would happen if half the Earth's population came back in a day? All of the chaos involved? For example, what about the people who were snapped and faded into dust who were in airplanes? And then they come back and they're in the sky where they were snapped originally, and they're just in the sky without their airplane. I mean, there's so many of those things that you can think about when it comes to that. And then, of course, there's the whole thing where Captain America goes back to return the stones, but doesn't return to the present. And I guess he just lives the life with Peggy, and he just goes back. And of course, he's got to bite his tongue about everything that happens in the past, like when Hydra takes over, because he doesn't want to change anything. But I mean, I still thought it was cool. Though, was it just me, or when Captain America, old Cap, shows up at the end of Endgame, he kind of looks like Clint Eastwood? I don't know. Maybe that's just me. So, hey, hope you enjoyed talking about all kinds of sci-fi and time travel with me and Free For All Friday in general. It's always a fun thing to chat about. I'll leave resources to this. I'll find the name of that book, actually. I think it was called The History of Time Travel, and leave it in the show description at trendhornpodcast.com, where if you're a premium subscriber, you get access to that, bonus content, all kinds of great stuff. If you are a silver level subscriber or higher, you get a mug with my mug on it. You get access to the Catechism Study Series, half-hour video lecture every Monday, 8 a.m. at trendhornpodcast.com. It is posted. Thank you all so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.